Hey there. It's your friendly podcast editor here, Jake. Tonight is going to be our season finale episode of Scotch and Socialism. It's been a great run so far with my other two hosts, Russ and Grift, and I'm very excited to continue on. We will be joining you back in the fall. Until then, thank you so much for listening and for joining us in the comments. Our website is still up, scotchandsocialism.com. Please come by, leave us a comment. We would love to hear from you. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the podcast where your hosts sample a different scotch each season while we dive into current social, political, and economic issues each episode. This is Scotch and Socialism. Welcome to the season finale episode of Scotch and Socialism.
Yay!
We made it through a season. How many episodes do we have? We have
9 no idea. Episodes?
Plus a few in the bank that for our premium subscribers.
Yeah, we keep talking about that. We probably should set that up at some point. I'm good with the Patreon. I think our listeners would be good with the Patreon if they wanted bonus content.
Hello, I am Jake, your resident overworked editor for the evening.
And I am Russ, the local wheel spinner for the evening. Talk about more of that in a minute.
We have to keep this family friendly, Russ.
It's the wheel spinner. It's fine.
And I'm Griff, apparently your resident censor for the evening. Oh man.
You would be, because apparently I can't be trusted to.
I have a degree in words.
Words. Anyways, we have tonight that episode. For our season finale episode, we are going to go through a semi-lightning round of topics we've kind of compiled together as like random topics we were going to discuss but haven't quite gotten around to yet. And
it's the potpourri round.
And we'll probably expand on these in future seasons.
I think so.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Some of these are pretty good.
I'm excited
to talk about some of these. I was like a little worried to talk about religion and stuff, and then
you're in a safe space, Jake.
No, I'm not. I know the two of
really
you.
Really not.
I'm really not.
But see, here's the thing. There's a difference in having a what's the best way to put it? There's a difference in having a discursive space that allows for people to share their ideas and interrogates those ideas, but does not shame the person for having those ideas. That's what we need if we want actual rigorous curricula.
What is discursive?
A discursive, it's basic, so it's like an environment in which discussion happens.
And Russ, spin that wheel!
Bankrupt.
Yep. I'd like to buy an E.
We didn't even put that on the wheel.
We should have. All right.
Should we save the planet is the topic.
Should we save the planet?
I think we need to have a second spinner to determine who actually needs to talk about this.
I'm going to say hard no. I don't think we should save the planet.
Start the countdown.
We talked about electric vehicles in one of our previous episodes. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to it. Shameless plug.
Episode 7.
Now, as much as I like electric vehicles, and I'm for all of these green new energy innovations, you know, changing the energy sector, moving away from really harmful stuff. But I have to ask why.
And for the children.
Why?
Well, you don't have kids, so I'm guessing that's kind of a new point of view.
You're looking at one small element of.
No, I'm looking at the propaganda.
Okay, because propaganda never focuses on one small element of a larger whole.
Oh, I know, right?
It's never done that
before.
Never done that.
No, I don't advocate actively destroying the planet.
I don't either. I'm not a misanthrope.
But I do agree with the idea that I think a lot of things we're doing, it's not going to matter that much.
No. Well, and that's the question is, why are we, you know, okay, so let me back it up there. I'm stumbling a little bit. Apologize. Say, okay, well, we want to reduce emissions. We want to have, you know, lower greenhouse gas. We want to make the planet more habitable.
Sure.
For what?
Aliens.
Us? Alien? And so, probably
okay,
not
let me,
aliens.
Let me reflex that question back to you. Why not? save the planet.
Because how long have we seen humans being totally horrible through most of history?
How long have we also seen humans being full of compassion and grace?
We see compassion and grace. I feel like the compassion and grace is the aberration, not the norm. And I disagree with Martin Luther King Jr. He's had a lot of good ideas, but his sentiment that, what do you say, the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards righteousness or something. I'm paraphrasing. I don't think he's right. Because humans have not fundamentally changed in the 40,000 years we've been in this state.
I would kind of argue that we have. I mean, you look at history, I'm looking at this from a more religious, theological context, which apparently we're going to be getting into tonight.
Maybe.
But, there's so much stuff that was out there, in just even a few thousand years ago of just, I just killed this random dude. And that was normal! I don't walk out there, get pissed off that somebody called me some sort of animal,
but see, the
and then shoot him.
The sentiment is still existent. Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote a great article about this in relation to the South and the Civil War. And he said, the South, the argument is, the South lost the Civil War. They might have lost the combat. They might have lost the sovereignty that the Confederate States granted. But that ideology of supremacy lasted for another 250 years and has only started trailing off. Now, yes, there are shining examples of humanity. I'm not going to argue that. But those are self-contained. They are inside the sphere of humandom, whatever you want to call it, the larger sphere of the planet as a whole. So when Bezos or Musk starts talking about, we're going to Mars, when people are like, we merge our consciousness with singularity and send ourselves out there amongst the stars, why?
I don't necessarily agree with that. I'm just talking, let's just.
But that's the next logical step.
Is it?
I mean, if your goal is to maintain the continuation of humanity and this planet is no longer viable, your option is either digitize your consciousness and shoot it into the stars or go to Mars.
But we're assuming that this planet will no longer be viable. I don't think we have crossed the point of no return. And I don't think that we should just say, screw it.
We're not at the point where the oceans are on fire and there's no trees. And we got a minute left of this. Oh, man, let's get up in a whole episode.
Uh-huh.
But how many legitimate scientific articles have we read that said it? This train has left the station.
How many legitimate scientific articles have said that for years that have already passed us and that date keeps moving? I'm not saying that I have it right. God help me if I ever say it's fine, we'll be okay. No, there is a clear and present crisis. And we can talk about that potentially more in another episode and why I believe that and the religious context around that. But I personally don't think that we should just stop and give up.
See, I don't think that we should give up. I think that we should not... If we look at this in the context of sports, we should just run out the clock. And then when humanity's over, that's it. And not try to push into overtime, because we're only going to keep growing as a population.
No, look at all the other countries.
We have 7.5 billion people on the planet.
Look at the massive amount of decline that we've had in birth rates
in certain countries, not in all of them. In developed first world nations, there are lots of third world countries that have not seen population crunches.
Yet.
You can argue yet forever.
Sure, but I think we've seen this coming for a long time.
And we're over time.
All right, final one-sentence blurb. I think that we should continue working to save the environment.
I think we should nuke and pave.
I'm pretty indifferent on the entire thing. I'm only here for another 20, 40 years and I'm out.
God, that's depressing.
I know, right?
Next topic.
This is fun.
This is why it's going to get really entertaining.
Do we find a topic we disagree on?
Apparently
this
so.
This is great.
Too much technology.
We're going to need more than 5 minutes for this.
We apparently needed for the last topic too. So this topic we kind of broached as a draft of just our lives are inundated with technology. I have my cell phone. I have my personal laptop, my personal desktop. I have a tablet. I have my work laptop. I have a smart TV. I have an Echo Home or Alexa, whatever it's called. And that's not even counting all of the random other tiny little smart devices that I might have. I have an auto deadbolt. I have...
Do you know how many devices are actually connected to your Wi-Fi network?
I should relook at them. Last time I checked, I think the average is 15 to 20.
Nice.
Yeah.
In this household, I have 57.
I personally believe that.
And those are IoT things. Those are not necessarily computers.
Yeah, I could not keep track of that.
I have a device dashboard that does.
Oh, yeah. That's the only way that I know.
Yeah.
You've got devices for your devices?
Well, yes. Yeah.
That's how Deviceception. It
works. Now, that being said, with all those fun things that you listed there, how much of those are just media in another form, right? Mm-hmm. You have your iPad, you've got your phone, you've got your computer. I mean, those are three basic screens. They offer you an interface into what we know as the internet today. They also offer you into social media, all sorts of other fun stuff, which could be a complex amalgamation of news, information, entertainment, kind of everything together, right? So the question, I think, really comes down to, when you have 10 different devices that serve you the same content, is it really 10 different devices?
Right. That's a good point, is especially like when I was using more Android-related stuff, we all know that Google is consuming all of the things that we do.
Oh, absolutely.
Arguably, Apple doesn't do it as much. They still do it, don't get me wrong. There are several tech companies that own my life, effectively, my physical life.
But nothing personally identifiable. Apple? That's the best part.
Meaning Apple, what? Yes. Google, absolutely. They could personally identify me.
Well, your name's not associated.
Oh, they know literally that, everything else.
They know that there's a male between the ages of 18 and 35 living in Spokane Valley at a specific address using a specific internet and your brand of toast, but they don't know your name.
Yeah, so arguably their age range is a lot closer than 18 to 35.
I was being overly.
Uh-huh.
I was being generous.
They probably know that I'm somewhere between 27 and a half to 28.
I would give them a 6-month window for that. Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is too much technology. I mean, we've now started to see things like ovens, toasters, TVs built into refrigerators. My friend has a Samsung TV/fridge that runs Android. It fully has all capabilities of an Android device on the front of a fridge.
Right.
It's weird.
It is a little bit. I mean, you talk about the tracking and stuff, and there's wonderful content creators out there that I will, this is my reminder to myself when I'm editing these episodes, I will try and actually add some information out there for some great content creators that talk about machine learning and ethics behind that and data gathering things. But you can also talk about it from like the society perspective.
Sure.
How
that's where
much
the
of
philosophers
our,
come in.
Right. And that's kind of where like the too much technology really kind of came in when we first talked about this, is like how much has technology really taken the place of our everyday interactions with our fellow human beings?
And the argument for that, it's been rehashed several times on the internet.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, in many internet forums and social media and whatnot. I'm definitely on the side of, I don't know if you guys have seen the meme, but there's effectively a meme of people sitting on a bus, everyone's head down, looking at their phones, doing whatever they're doing. You know, reading the news, checking their Facebook, looking at pictures of cats. And then the 1925 version of that where everyone's head down in their newspapers.
Right.
And not talking to anybody, just engrossed in their current readings.
We haven't changed.
And that's just it. I don't think we have.
We just
have
different toys.
Yeah. It's a different medium. That's it.
Oh, the argument holds.
I don't think that it does. I think the argument holds here. I don't think it holds in the greater context. But you're right. Like, it's not as if humanity has suddenly become enslaved to our phones. I think it's just exacerbated the problem.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's more convenient.
Right, exactly.
Or is this a matter of standing in a moving river? And we're always going to be, I mean, if you look at when, you know, emergent technology really started to come out, and we go all the way back to the 1700s and Industrial Revolution, that how often was that seen as too much technology?
Sure.
I mean, we're constantly moving the goalposts. Now I hear about someone, oh, it's got the smart fridge. What the hell do you need a smart fridge for? You know,
that's my thought.
Right? A lot of times these things are convenience. Mm-hmm. A lot of it does come down to convenience. But then the question is, well, why do we need so much? If you quantify your time in units, like minutes or seconds, whatever, but you know what I mean? And these technological innovations are meant to conserve you more units of life. Well, what's the telos? What's the greater good there? I don't mean moralistic good. I just mean like, what's the greater goal?
Sure. Yeah. Well, and that's what most devices, I think, have been created for, is just optimizing your time, or at least shortening the time that you need to do something. And I feel like that's a good thing. I also do feel it's definitely a detractor, because it is a convenience of, oh, I can pick up my phone and 3 hours later, I'm like, what was I doing?
Laundry? Reddit.
You know, and that's just it, right? I think because the information is available and people are inquisitive, or at least seeking entertainment, they do tend to spend more time than they actually expect to in using these devices and using, well, just the internet in general, I would say.
Yep.
All right.
Closing thoughts? All good?
I think it's, technology is a tool. It's awesome, but it can certainly be misused.
I think we use it as a crutch.
I think it's only going to get worse.
Probably.
All right, moving on.
Ding, 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 ding.
Big money, no whammies.
Turned off the sound just so.
Odd food combinations. What the foods?
Ooh.
So that last lovely voiceover was done by the interesting individual in our midst that likes pineapple on pizza.
Accurate.
Get ready to get flamed up on Jake.
Pineapple on pizza is a beautiful thing. It's fatty. It's acidic. You got a little bit of the salt from the cheese. It is a combination of beautiful flavors coming together as a wonderful medley in the mouth.
Did you write that poem yourself?
No, I thought of it on the
fly. You don't put fruit on pizza.
What about tomatoes?
Mmm, snap.
It's like the side. I mean, you don't call ketchup a smoothie.
Have you had a margarita pizza?
I've drank ketchup.
I've drank Oh my God, we are so far into the weeds already.
No, but like a margarita pizza has slices of tomato the pizza.
Yeah, I know. I just like mine.
So you break your own rules.
I know.
No, I think pineapple on pizza is great. I also think so.
Nobody knows tomatoes are fruit anyways. It's fine.
Yeah, I know. I also think
legally not
that the best flavor of ice cream I've ever had in the world, it came from this weird, quirky ice cream chain from Portland called Salt and Straw. If any of our listeners ever find it, go there. Bougie. They always have new stuff. This was a seasonal flavor, and they have not had it since, and it's a travesty. But it is caramel, vanilla, and fish sauce.
Go away.
Oh,
Hold on. That is only something you could get in the freak show that is Portland.
Agreed.
Accurate.
I mean, that might exist in San Francisco. Maybe.
Even there, really, like I went to a Salt and Straw there, and it was not nearly as weird.
Salt and Straw is just one of those places where it's like, oh, this is our tiramisu pickle juice sundae.
Neat.
I wouldn't be too surprised. But their overall ice cream quality, like not just their super weird flavors like that, is high quality. However, that fish sauce and caramel, I know it's weird. I know it sounds just god-awful. I'm wanting to get an ice cream machine to try and replicate it.
Fish sauce is one of those things that I smelled it once and went, no, and then I realized that it was in everything that I eat from Thai food.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. Like, mm-hmm. It adds a depth.
Oh, it smells like old feet.
Yeah, it does, but it's fine.
Who had the idea to just put that on food?
I don't know.
Like, this smells awful. I'm going to put it on my food.
It's a fermented product. Just people started eating stuff that went bad. Yep. And that's then basically the people who didn't die really enjoyed it.
X-Men is speaking what we call them.
Pickled herring.
Never had it, but I imagine it would destroy your taste buds.
You were over. You had one.
I don't think I did. I probably smelled it and said hard pass.
Fair.
I'm pretty conventional when it comes to foods.
Yeah.
Very Scandinavian.
Reminds me of when we used to do youth group games of like Fear Factor, quote unquote. And a lot of times it was just like
random foods.
Some mustard preserved anchovies and whatever we could find and throw in a blender.
When
you're making your own, that just doesn't.
That's cheating.
Oh, yeah. No. There was some childhood traumas that were definitely created. I somewhat apologize, but also I was the one who was watching. I never had to do it myself, and I'm kind of okay with that.
Okay, Joe Rogan.
Thoughts on dill pickles and peanut butter sandwiches?
Are you pregnant?
Anyone done this? It's actually quite good.
I've not had it, but I could see it.
It's actually quite good. I was impressed. I was very hesitant, mm-hmm. But it actually turned out really well. I was actually very impressed.
I can't get behind it.
Grilled cheese sandwiches, with or without ketchup?
Without.
Without, generally, but I do like it dipped in tomato.
Well, like a tomato bisque or something.
Yeah, I actually don't like tomato soup, though.
I've never dipped a grilled cheese in tomato.
Really?
Never.
Interesting.
I
like it with bisque. I do have a lot of friends that like it with ketchup, and I'm just like, you what?
No, I can't.
I have friends
that
like macaroni and cheese with ketchup. Yeah.
That's also an odd one.
Or like chicken nuggets and ketchup. I had friends growing up. I didn't know.
Chicken nuggets with ketchup is acceptable.
I think
what else would you put on chicken nuggets?
Barbecue sauce, ranch. Honey mustard. Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Go away. What? No.
All right. We're learning things.
Just,
okay, we'll string them up later. It's fine.
I think I was overloaded with ketchup as a young child.
Sure.
And so I've actually only recently being about 5 years, maybe a little longer, come back on the whole like, ketchup's okay.
Interesting thing about ketchup for me, I can't eat the green or purple ketchup.
It tastes
identical.
Green ketchup.
It was
a thing back in like the early 2000s.
I don't know if they've done it again. I know they do purple now.
Still?
Yeah, it's like kids' ketchup. It's
it's
ketchup. It just doesn't have the red dye. But
it's sad that ketchup needs dye.
Well, if I close my eyes, it doesn't taste any different. But if I'm looking at it, I cannot eat it.
Fair. Other weird foods.
Candy corn.
In general. Candy corn, I have 3 pieces a year, and I like those 3 pieces a year, and I have to have them over the span of 3 hours on Halloween night. That is it.
I have to be in a very specific mood for candy corn.
I don't eat candles very often.
I don't always eat candles, but when I do, it's candy corn.
I reach for candy corn. Yeah, that's I tried it once when I was a child. I've never touched it again.
Last lightning round of weird foods that you like. I like dim sum chicken feet.
Chicken aren't bad. Frog legs are good too.
Yeah. Korean barbecue grilled large intestine. What else have I had that's weird?
Just in case any of our listeners don't know, sausage and hot dogs are made in intestine by default.
Uh-huh.
And usually something synthetic if you are going cheap end. But if you ever get a chance, go see how sausage is made. I guarantee you won't be happy.
Oh, probably not.
I have broken so many of my friends
with this. That's why the term, see how the sausage is made, is not a flattering term.
I'm personally okay with it. Russ, last few weird foods that you like?
I am a very picky eater. I don't like weird food, comma. I love things like pickled herring.
So weird. Griff?
I don't have any. I'm conventional. I'm boring.
Yeah, I've tried feeding you a couple of things, and it
except
just didn't
candy
work
corn. I'm a texture guy. It's just
cold chicken doesn't do it for me.
Nope. All right, on to the next one. Oh, we're getting down. We're actually not getting down to that many. We still have five or six. Taboo subjects.
That's a good one.
I'll take things we can't talk about for 400, Alex. Rest in peace.
There's a list. There's absolutely a list. We've learned doing this podcast that we would come up with some interesting ideas. We'd sit down and go,
maybe not.
Maybe we don't want to do that one right now. Maybe that's a little too much of a hot button issue. Now, we try to be as respectful as humanly possible. Obviously, these are our opinions. However, it appears there are certain topics that we are not allowed, or at least we should not talk about, either very much or I don't want to say, because even the topic of taboo. Sure. Kind of has a weird taboo to it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm probably one of the voices here other than Griff's wife saying like, hey, we probably shouldn't talk about this, or we need to be a lot more careful when we prep for it. Because while we're respectful, I think, and this is coming from somebody who's talking in the podcast, we're also pretty irreverent, including very much myself. And so, like, topics of, race, gender, sexuality, etc., because we are three white cis males.
We're the enemy.
Not the enemy, but it's just like we have such a limited experience in a lot of these subjects that personally I want to be a little bit careful of broaching. And most of the times when I have said like, hey, let's be careful when talking about something to do with trans rights or whatever, I think there was a recent rash of issues, and I think it's still ongoing, of like trans people in sports.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's like, that's not been something that has been a part of my life. And I have also seen several of my trans friends and cohort become very burned and burdened by culture and what people thought of them. And so for me to talk about that without having very much experience is just, it feels off, but it may not necessarily be the case.
I feel that, we are presenting our opinions.
Sure.
That's what the podcast is. Like, we try to throw in facts when we can. We try to do minimal research sometimes. But I mean, all in all, we're here to enjoy ourselves. And when we're speaking from our perspective, that's the point of the podcast. It is our perspective. When you say stupid things about computers or farming or not liking pickled herring, those are your opinions, sure. Right? And they're not taboo subjects. They're not, no one's going to crucify you. I would hope no one's going to crucify you about, not knowing farming.
See, again, haven't had crucifixions in a lot of culture. Things
still
change.
Still connotation of very negative. Sorry. Yes. No, but that's just it. It's like, it's interesting that we shouldn't talk about certain things that we don't have experience with, even though we talk about stuff we don't have experience with all the time.
That's true.
But these things aren't necessarily always integral to our identities. And that's the other aspect too, is that a lot of these topics that end up being more quote unquote taboo is that they are so far removed from our identities and experiences that to talk about them would not be a conversation.
So would you guys shoot me down if we decided to talk about owning our own jets, Learjets, and piloting our own planes? None of us are pilots. None of us own a jet that I'm aware of.
Right, but we can speculate in that way, but
that's not disrespectful. But suddenly,
it's because,
if we talk about,
it's because
one
you're
of
talking
the big
about
five,
I mean, you're talking about a material object. You know, yeah, there's a difference between a material between I'd like to have a Learjet. You know, I'd fly all over the place, and us talking about like whether or not trans people should be allowed to be in the military.
Sure,
that's like, a fairly large difference
like,
in
it's,
flavor.
It's rather
topic.
Unlikely that us say like our ownership of a jet or lack thereof, I suppose, is that integral to our definitions of ourselves in our
no
identities.
One's been persecuted, beaten, or subjugated because
I agree
they owned a jet,
but that's why they
no I would
mean,
like to do some of that to Jeff Bezos sometimes.
Maybe. I mean the whole Krepko dollar thing just makes me so furious.
Prosperity gospel preachers,
prosperity gospel, demons in a tube. Look it up. I'll probably post
that's
another
amazing.
Link. It's so infuriating.
I don't even know.
But it's I don't know. Ultimately, I'm happy to have these conversations. I just, like, my thing with especially a platform like a podcast is no matter how much we talk about, we're not being prescriptive and that we don't know what we're talking about.
Someone is going to take that, right?
Yeah. And just talking about these subjects on a platform like this with not really having any back and forth, partly because I'm so bad at responding to our commenters, like, it is going to be prescriptive no matter what we say.
Fair. And I can definitely see that. It is interesting, especially looking at today's society, where we are actively attempting to have more conversations about these subjects to make them more commonplace, to make them more understood, while still kind of ostracizing people who want to talk about them just from their opinion. And it's because of the one-sidedness, I do agree that there is a level of this is the truth as opposed to this is my opinion. And I wish that wasn't the case, because I really would enjoy having conversations about things that we technically can't have conversations about.
Right.
Or shouldn't, I guess would be a better word.
Arguably, I think there is much more room for discourse in society from both sides. I think that there's a lot of hyperbole from both sides saying that the other side is restricting their speech.
I think certain opinions can exist on their own in the public area, but other opinions are better received and form a more complete cohesion, whatever you want to say, when they have a partner opinion.
Sure.
And that's why, yes, the three of us, all of our
we tend to share the same.
We do. We fall pretty closely. And that's fine. But for us, like, well, this is our opinion on trans rights. It's like, well, yeah, we have our opinion, but to have a whole existence there
to provide the entire view.
Yeah, you really need to have someone from that population group there. Otherwise, that's not going to be as quality of a conversation.
Now, next question is like, how do we make sure they're not a token?
That's
blank.
That's the problem, right?
No, that's actually not quite as hard, because if we have, say, someone of African American or whatever descent, someone who's not straight white male, as long as you try to personalize it to them, say, tell me about your experience and just let them talk. Don't say, well, you know, isn't it bad when blah, 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 or just don't put them in a place to speak for that entire group, but have them speak from their personal experience. That's a genuine conversation, because they're not the ambassador for.
I feel like that's the weird the two-sided coin that we're working with here, that you can say we should have someone on, invite them to speak from their experience point of view. Right. Why can't we speak from our point of view?
Well, we can.
It's just it's kind of
there's no dialogue.
Vacuum,
there.
Sure,
right. That's the thing.
Anyways, we are over time on this one, so let's kick up another spin of the wheel, see where we end up.
Religion.
Ah, the religion topic.
This is, well, we might need more than 5 minutes for this.
Jake, you want to roll us in?
Should we talk about scotch first?
I think that's a great time to talk about scotch.
Why don't we break into our scotch break?
This is your regularly scheduled scotch break.
Yay, so, scotch.
Yay, scotch. So before we jump into our religion topic,
we're going to have a drink.
I don't need a drink.
Remember, kids, if you need a reason to drink, you shouldn't.
That's accurate.
You know, back. Can we put that on a shirt?
Talking about scotch, one of the things that I always took for granted with Scotch was like the idea of a traditional round of Scottish golf, right? Where, and I learned this because my family is very morbid.
Let the boy talk. We'll see where he's going with
it. Yeah.
So my dad, you know, when I was the ripe old age of 10, told me that he, when he dies, he wanted to be cremated, put into golf balls, and then everybody plays a traditional round of Scottish golf, and nobody knows which golf balls have his ashes in them.
That's clever.
Mm-hmm. We're still looking to figure out somebody who can actually put the ashes in a golf ball that could survive being hit by a golf club.
Fair.
Anyways, so I asked him, what is a traditional round of Scottish golf? And he said that traditionally, there are only 18 rounds of golf or 18 holes because there are 18 shots of whiskey or scotch specifically in a bottle. Turns out this is apocryphal.
But it's a great story.
It is a great story. That's
awesome.
Never let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Yeah. So looking at, and I'll try and post this article in the comments or in the notes for this episode, but Flinders Golf Club .com talks about there are the broad strokes of how a typical course came to have 18 holes. Sadly, the number has nothing to do with how many shots are in a bottle of scotch, though that makes for a much more fun story. In any event, if you love golf, 18 holes is great because it takes a long time to play that many. It took a long time for this to become the standard, even longer than it takes to play 18 holes at a public course today. And so basically, St. Andrews came up with 18 holes, and there wasn't a particular Scottish reason, and I'll post this in the
probably only had room for.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's funny about life is that a lot of the reasons behind why we do things is just out of
boredom
or necessity. Oh, why 18 hole? Maybe it's some mysterious numerological thing. Nope, that's literally all the land they had.
Yeah. And apparently at some point St. Andrews had 22 holes at a round of golf. That would be a very long day.
It would.
You'd be pretty tired after that.
And eventually it was just cut down to 18 arbitrarily when four short holes were combined into two different holes played in two different directions in 1764.
Never played a round of golf.
You should. It's delightful.
I have once, and that was before I had surgery to fix my legs, and my golf game was pretty atrocious then.
No, I like going to the driving range. Never actually swung on a...
You just like watching people hit golf balls?
No, I'll go and hit balls at the driving range. I'll get a bucket and just like, whoosh, because it's low commitment.
Fair.
Sure. You can spend 4 hours, you can spend 30 minutes at the driving range. Whereas if you saddle up for full 18 holes, fill your calendars.
Yeah, that's a day.
Yeah. Good exercise if you're walking.
Oh, absolutely.
And Twain say that golf is a nice walk ruined by a tiny white ball.
Mm-hmm.
I think Twain said that sounds Twain-esque.
It's very, very Twain-ish.
Probably. Hey, comment at us if you know who had the quote.
Or just put more Twain quotes because, you know, whatever.
Yeah. So getting back to the topic, religion. I guess we can, I don't know.
This restart is such the clock, Russ. There's a lot we could do with this. I mean, take it away, Jake. As the resident more religious person.
I guess,
set the tone. What are we talking about?
Oh, man. I mean... Do I do my whole testimony within the span of a minute?
No.
Like, I don't know.
That's quite the elevator pitch, sir. Jesus.
Jesus.
He's great.
I mean, that's effectively what my testimony is.
Jesus,
I don't know.
He's great.
Yeah. I mean, I've been.
That's on a shirt somewhere.
It shouldn't be. What? Punctuation. Punctuation would matter there.
Yep. Anyways. Yeah, I don't know. Growing up, I grew up in the evangelical side-ish of things, but I also was in the very conservative Presbyterian side. For those of you who aren't super familiar with a lot of the way that Christianity kind of works in the United States, is like the evangelical Pentecostal side is a lot of like jumping, dancing, waving of hands, occasionally speaking in tongues, babbling, that sort of thing. I don't know where I stand on speaking in tongues right now at this particular point. I actually don't know where I stand on a lot of things theologically at this point. I have gone through a huge, weird upheaval in the last, especially 2 years. Like we're halfway through 2021. The pandemic, I know it's weird. The pandemic really shook up a lot of things for me personally. Like I ended up having to leave a church that I was working at as the worship pastor, kind of being edged out, not for any sort of like moral failing, quote unquote, and not for like even questioning things, but I was just kind of pushed out. And then in the midst of all of that, like that opened me up to actually being able to verbalize a lot of questions on like, what does it truly mean to be saved? How did Jesus, you know, like, how did all of that happen? Like, I am a firm believer in Christ. I'm a firm believer in the death and resurrection of Christ and that we are saved only through him. But there's a lot of stuff that I took for granted growing up in the faith that I'm like, oh man, I had that wrong. Like, there was that I grew up in part of the faith that was like, oh, you don't speak in tongues? Well, are you sure you're saved? Ooh. There is nothing in Scripture, nothing that says that. And anybody who has told you differently is a liar, and I am sorry, because that can mess you up really badly.
There are a lot of logical fallacies in the practice of religion, not necessarily in Christianity or Judaism, Islam. We'll get those later. But things like that is a textbook definition of a no true Scotsman fallacy. And you can move those goalposts. And exactly. I think that's what puts off a lot. We are living in the least religious time in history right now. Mm-hmm. More people identify with no organized religion than with an organized religion, which is kind of interesting. And I think a lot of them have a bad taste in their mouth from stuff like that.
Understandable.
You know, I was baptized Methodist, confirmed Lutheran, kind of shifted to Presbyterian. That's all the mainline Protestant, so it's all very, very similar. It's like vanilla, French vanilla, or vanilla with chocolate chips. Vanilla bean. Always very progressive. Congregations, you know, very, you know, forward thinking, but still very, you know, much rooted in faith, Christ being the Savior, pretty much everything you just said on gospels and so forth. But I've been to churches with gay pastors. I've been to churches with female pastors. I've been to churches with very integrated congregations, and they've all felt pretty good, you know? And I think the difference was, a thing for me was that in those youth group settings, and I don't mean youth group where it's like, you know, you go and you do the fun stuff and music and food, but there were, in my confirmation class, for example, it was weekly. There were 15 of us in a room talking about serious theological questions.
Right.
And prep me for grad school. Woo. But
I feel like a lot of religions don't do that.
They don't.
And that's what and kind of pushes me out.
And a lot of Christian traditions don't. And
well, it's blindly follow. Don't ask questions.
I had a pastor at one of those churches who were I've had two really good pastors. I've had a lot of really good pastors, but two that stick out. They were both very humble, both very not critical in like a, you know, aggressive type of way, but like trying to really distill down to the honest truth, removing all of the excess, removing all of the noise. And they were very open about their own struggles with faith. They're very open about their own shortcomings. One of them definitely championed a healthy skepticism of all of it. Mm-hmm. The other one was very much about, you know, faith should be a net positive for your mental health, because he had a background in psychology. And I think that really shaped. Now, I did take the atheist route for a couple of years. But I think those two pastors ultimately really kind of, as a kind of counterpoint,
sure,
offense to what Jake was saying, is why I've never really had a bad taste for religion in that way. Now, everyone's had been at odds with their spiritual standings.
As
but
I think that you should be.
Yes, I think you do need that, because then when you come back to it, you are usually in a more authentic, more personalized space with it.
Well, I feel like if you actually understand it, you can accept it more wholly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, one thing, so kind of like you, baptized Lutheran, confirmed Lutheran, dropped off into the atheist bucket for a bit until I realized agnostic was an option. It's kind of where that ended up. But I actually enjoyed reading about other religions. Like I've spent a lot of time just kind of doing general research on all the religions, because I find them fascinating.
Yeah.
And I learned just a lot from even my own, you know, upbringing. It's like, you know, I wouldn't say my church was very much, you know, follow the rule, you know, follow teachings blindly, but it was, when we had questions, there was no authoritation. There was no, oh, well, you know, let's dig into that further. It's, oh no, that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And we moved on.
Yeah.
And so I felt it was very lacking in that regard. And thus it kind of pushed me away from it.
Interesting. Like I started getting pushed away because of the severe amount of people who thought they had authoritative truth.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's why, like, I'm not completely pushed away from the faith by any means, but that's why I am effectively not at a church right now.
I am. Well, you're not associated specifically.
Yeah, right? I am part of what I would say, you know, the big capital C church, and that's why I work at the Revival Project on Sundays, which is not, you know, the Revival is a word that we would use in more evangelical context that has weird bad heebie-jeebies. We're a soup kitchen. That's all we do. Like, we pray with people if they ask for it. But it's that's right. effectively it. So we definitely ran over on this particular topic.
This is going to be a topic for season two.
I'm excited for this one. Season two. Closing real thoughts really fast.
If you don't think you have a religious background or don't think you want one, research all of them.
Mm. Yes.
I guarantee you'll find one that aligns with you that still makes the world a better place.
The DK Publishing Company published a book of religions. The nice. Big Book of Religions. Mm. I have it. It's great. Buy it.
Yeah. My closing thoughts, I might use a couple of really big words here because they sum up really big ideas. I firmly believe in the gospel, and I believe that the eschaton is here. Look it up. It's a really important theological aspect, but basically do not separate the sacred and the secular. I think there is going to be redemption of all things, and I think we should work towards that.
And that's why Jake believes in saving the planet.
There
that's effectively
go.
It.
I think humans are mostly a waste of carbon.
All right.
I think humans are made in the image of God.
Spinning the wheel.
Spinning the wheel.
Oh, body shaming.
Here we go.
Ooh.
So this is a topic that we're definitely going to have Christy back on for.
Yes.
She has a ton to say about this that's really important.
Yes.
Really good info. Really good info.
Mm-hmm. Well, from multiple perspectives, number one, being a female, females are more subject to the whims and wiles of popular culture, unfortunately.
Well, they always have been, right? Like, yeah. It's been very predominant in...
Well...
Have they been, or is that our perception?
Well, it's my perception. I mean, it's from what I've seen growing up. It's always been told to me, right?
Okay, hold on. I'm going to call time on that because image in general has always been a huge thing. You look back, and we can just go back. Let's just go back to the 1700s, you know, perceptions of people. Now, men were expected to do XYZ. Women were expected to do ABC, whatever. I think it's gotten more pronounced in recent years. And by recent, I mean the last, like, 80, probably.
Sure.
Because of the market shift and because of kind of shifting and then solidifying gender roles. And I think when you have this idea of body shaming or idealized image, it kind of by default, and I think appropriately, falls more towards being subject to the female side of things. Now, men, yes, we do have... You know, oh, you guys should be, you know, buff and, you know, masculine. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's there. I don't think it is nearly to the extent or to the pervasiveness that females probably experience.
Yeah, and I guess I would personally rephrase that kind of more how you did at the end. Is like it's the pressure and the pervasiveness arguably is probably much worse for women because it's been perpetuated that for years. I mean, like Western culture especially is a patriarchal society.
Oh yeah.
And we're just kind of breaking out of that within the last couple of hundred years. And so like men or males, however we want to define that, have traditionally
it's become muddy because of this kind of stuff.
It has a little bit, but you know, male presenting folks, let's use that term.
Is that official anywhere? No.
It is now.
Yeah.
Have traditionally not had nearly as many pressures on how we need to look or anything like that. Now, as far as body shaming, now I think this topic bleeds very much into hopefully another episode we get to have with another one of Griff's friends on, you know, the role of gender stereotypes in society.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
I have fallen down the TikTok hole. Help me, please send help. It's a problem.
Throw a rope.
But I've, you know, my best friend and I keep passing back and forth clips of my favorite horse to beat, religion, but specifically independent fundamentalist Baptists, which are like, whenever you think of like the crazy, I probably shouldn't use that term, but the folks who are like, guys have to be a very specific way, must wear pants, all these sorts of things, and women have to wear dresses, that sort of thing. That's a lot of the rhetoric that comes out
of
this
particular denomination. Do they realize it's not 1850?
Well, yeah,
do they realize that Jesus didn't wear pants? No, because there was a sermon on that I had to sit through.
Maybe.
Jesus didn't wear pants. I'm down for it.
It's interesting too because it's not just religion that has those kind of weird
absolutely.
Constraints, right? It's a good example,
right?
But a lot of businesses also have fallen into that category mm-hmm. of if you are male, you'd wear certain attire.
I
if
have
you're female,
an
example
of
attire.
This. Yeah, I had a CS prof who male, moderately hefty at the time, and he this was I think early 2000s, maybe late 90s. So he was doing IT work, and that was back when dress codes were really a thing in business. They're less so now, depending on where you're at,
sure.
Especially on the West Coast. We don't really care.
Yep.
But the dress code was, and it was worded specifically this way, you must wear a full suit, like business attire, or a dress.
Wow.
It did not specify genders.
Ooh, there you go.
Mind you, Brian was working IT, and you are crawling at our desks all day.
Oh, yeah.
It is hot. It is muggy. It is awful. And so he tried appealing it. They wouldn't change it. So he read the bylaws, and it just said dress. It didn't specify gender. So he and another colleague of his, I think, started showing up in dresses. Man, that dress code changed real fast.
I was going to say, how far can we push the word kilt into dress world, right?
I love it.
I think it's fantastic.
I think if it goes below your knees, it's a dress.
Fair enough.
I love it. Oh my gosh.
Leave it to an IT folk to do that.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
I feel like IT folk, myself included, are the epitome of anti-authority. You know, if you tell us one thing, we are going to find every possible loophole to just completely dismantle it.
Same. Yeah, it's
gotten off topic a little bit.
A little bit, but pulling it back to body image, body shaming, like certainly I think the three of us, certainly I can speak for myself, I have definitely felt this, like seeing males in popular culture media, it's very tough. Like I've always quote unquote struggled with weight and struggled with my own body image. Like I've always had a gut, no matter how active I was, no matter how inactive I was, I have maintained this effective body shape for almost all of my life. And you know, growing up around people who were very athletic and who had bodies that were very athletic, quote unquote, I guess.
But see, even athleticism doesn't take the same shape.
Exactly. No. Exactly. But it's like now one of the things that I'm hopeful about as we move forward as a society, and especially as we're breaking some of these chains within the Western Christian context, is like we're starting to do away with those, like you must look like this and you must act like this.
And I'm not sure if that's a sign of the times, but I feel the same way. Like as I was growing up, when I was much younger, I definitely felt more of the body shaming, not only from my peers, but also just from general media,
right. The
world, right? And as I'm getting older, I'm realizing that it feels like it's lessening. Now, I don't know if it's because the world actually is backing off or if it's because I'm growing more apathetic, which, I mean, both are good in my opinion. you know, you shouldn't have to care what you look like. Now, you should be happy with who you are. And if that needs to change, you know, you want to get somewhere else in life with it, sure, that's fantastic. But it shouldn't be society to tell you that.
Right,
right.
Griff, any closing thoughts? Any thoughts?
I mean, y'all nutshelled it pretty perfectly there.
Sweet.
I mean, I feel like body shaming comes from a place of a very limited perspective of what is appealing and what is quote unquote healthy.
Yeah.
And there's a lot that does not align with that. One, beauty being completely in the eye of the beholder. And two, health going beyond just physical size or a weight number.
Yes.
Like if you look at sumo wrestlers, big guys, big dudes, very healthy. You know, it's you don't have to fit health and beauty do not fit into boxes or one particular box. Put that on a t-shirt, geez. All right.
That's a lot of words to put on a t-shirt.
Little words.
A lot of
six-point font. Italicized.
Go. Oh, God. Could you imagine?
Arial.
Just like start it like font size like 700 and then move your down to like until you get to like 0.1.
I like that. Yep. Like that wall in Willy Wonka, the contract when it busts out the magnifying glass.
That's fantastic.
How are we going to tackle this one?
Crappy family history, because I can't say the other word on this podcast.
Even though Jake is predominantly the one who is censoring himself most of the time.
It rhymes with hitty.
Yeah.
Or city.
Eat Schmidt and die. So, yeah, crappy family history.
Tell us why this one's up there, Jake. Start the clock, Russ.
I think that talking about family histories and, you know, pressures that we have growing up, and this kind of flows from the body shaming topic.
Well, it flows into a lot really of our important. Topics, right? I mean, we've talked a couple of times about kind of the pressures that exist in society, our upbringings, how that's shaped us moving forward, all kinds of fun stuff like that. And I think your family history and the people you grew up with unfortunately have a lot more influence over you than you probably realize.
Right. Speaking for me, like one of the things that I really want to normalize is the idea of just going to counseling, whether or not it's on a semi-permanent basis, having someone who's moderately trained in dealing with these heavy scenarios to talk to is incredibly important, especially as we as a society have been moving away from the big kind of not family structures, but like the close tight knit communities.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If in the physical sense, and arguably people are being in the much online more sense, isolated. Yeah, in the online sense, I think we're much more connected. But in the physical sense of like, you know, you grew up in the same town, you knew all the same people right. forever and ever. We don't have that anymore. We don't have that in our cities. We don't have that in our towns, and we don't have that in our religious bodies. And so I think this is like. This is coming to the forefront, this crappy family history, because there's less of that structure that automatically works to hide that, because arguably it did for a lot of our history.
Well, the more people you have, you fill in the gaps, right?
Like sure.
If and you have someone who's not being supportive, someone else will step up.
Right. And there's a way of like where we kind of, you know, you just don't talk about that sort of a thing. But now like these things are coming to the forefront, but now we don't also have that support mechanism that's in
absolutely.
Place. So speaking for myself, giving, you know, the really nitty gritty, and I don't mean to be incredibly depressive about this, nor do I mean to delegitimize anybody else's story. Like, I had a moderately rough time growing up-ish. I mean, granted, I'm white male, live middle-class family.
Within your world, it was pretty rough.
It was, yeah. And so, like, my dad was an alcoholic and abused drugs. Long story short, severe, massive, chronic pain. I think we talked about this in the drug episode. And he and I had a horrible relationship growing up. He would very rarely speak to me unless it was basically to yell at me for doing something wrong. And that shaped a lot of my worldview, like sure. whether or not I wanted it to, and whether or not I even started to understand that that's not the way that people should act. And I'm realizing that while the drugs and the alcohol were a massive component of that, it's kind of a generational thing in my family. Like his father before him had not great relationship with his sons. My dad had two other brothers and all had the same kind of issues of like, you know, Grandpa Daryl is an interesting human being. Like he was moderately aloof, Navy dad sort of a thing. And then just like, I don't think he knew how really to, you know, lift up his kids.
Sure.
And looking back on his folks, like I didn't know his dad, but his mom, my grandma Elsie, old crotchety German woman, they will outlive us all.
Nice.
Like she passed, I think, less than 10 years ago now. And, but I, you know, I could see those inklings of like, again, very hard family structure. And while potentially not physically abusive, certainly what we would call emotional abuse today. And just like working through that, I argue, is incredibly important. And realizing that is a part of your framework for how you're viewing the world is incredibly important and valid.
Absolutely.
So here's a question I'm going to pose to both of you. I wrote an article a couple months ago, I think it was in The Atlantic, maybe Politico, about how this move away from multi-generational communal living to the more kind of picket fence, we'll call it the leave it to beaver approach, you know.
Sure.
Houses, one family, mom, dad, kids. One slice of one
very Norman Rockwell.
Yes, two slices of generation in one living situation.
Sure.
Actually said that was an aberration, and that yep. we've had multi-generational living for millennia.
Yeah.
Now, the question is that good or bad? Is that aberration net positive or net negative? Because while on the one hand you can get out of those toxic familial relationships, on the other you give up a potential for a safety or support structure.
Mm-hmm.
It's very true. I think both comes with pros and cons. I mean, there's definitely some leverage on both sides. I did want to circle back just a touch to Jacob's point. Therapy is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It's
helped me a lot.
It's helped me as well. And it's one of those scenarios where I don't think I would have the ability to assess myself as well as I do today without having a person being that mirror that helps me to look at the specific items that I need to look at. Now that I've gotten a little more used to doing that, I can do a lot more on my own. I can definitely take a moment and be like, why is this a thing? How is this happening? Mm-hmm. I can almost step back away from myself to look at myself, which I think is the hardest thing to do in the world.
Tremendously.
To really stand beside yourself and look at the qualities of yourself as a person. I think that scares a lot of people, for one, but just having that ability doesn't come naturally, and you need someone to kind of guide you into that world of, hey, let's think about your behavior. Let's think about your thoughts. Let's think about, you know, all these fun things that exist in the world that are you, effectively. Because as I'm sure a lot of you have experienced, when you're in a relationship yourself, when you're dealing with, you know, the interpersonal communication issues between you and your boss, it's very foggy. Like there's not a lot of clarity that comes out of these situations. And your friends and your family are generally the ones to be like, hey, you're in a toxic relationship, or hey, you're in a bad working environment, or you know, whatever. And you do have to rely on those people because they have a potential, usually better view of what's going on than you do, because you are in the midst of it. And I think therapy, in my opinion, has really opened my eyes to being able to kind of take a step back out of that fog and be able to look at the situation from almost an impartial third person. And it's been amazing to look at stuff and go, wow, that's a really toxic environment, or that's a really bad relationship, and then correct it accordingly. You know, and that's been paramount in my last like 10 years or so. I've also noticed that in general, people have much smaller social circles, and it kind of speaks to, you know, the whole idea that we don't have that support structure that we usually have. The more people we have around us, obviously, the more people that can catch the issues. When we're down to, you know, our five people we hang out with, or our three people, or the one person we hang out with,
it does become harder.
A lot of stuff falls through the cracks, I think. A lot of things go unnoticed, and that's why it's important for you as a person to also be watching out.
You're both looking at me now.
We haven't heard you talk a lot, so we want to make sure you got your moment. Anyways, wrap it up.
Final closing thought on that one, Russ?
Basically, just, you know, help yourself, because if you can help yourself, you can help others.
Put your oxygen mask on first.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, like, one of the things that I'm really thankful, like, my mom was going through a lot of this, like, in the semi-abusive relationship at the same time, that she pointed out to me, like, hey, I know you're going through really crappy stuff right now, and it's tough. I want you to not think about just simply what you wouldn't do. I want you to think about what you're going to do differently instead when you have your own kids, because that's the best thing that we could ever do for us. Anyways, so we're on to politics.
Politics. Oh, gosh.
Are you left-leaning, right-leaning, centerist people?
I'm pretty far left about most things.
I mean,
policy-wise,
Yeah, if we're jumping into that particular, like, I'm probably moderately centrist, left-leaning. There are days where I'm just, like, full-on libertarian. Those don't happen very often anymore. And usually those are just days where I'm just, like, tired of people. But, yeah, I mean, like, I think that government should exist to the betterment of all people, not specific people. But I also, you know, understand the idea that government is run by people who are also inherently flawed and often look out for their own self-interests, which can look like they're looking out for their constituents when they're really not. I think social programs are great. I think we forget that things like fire departments, police, education were all social programs that we have continued on for nigh on 100 years now here in the United States. And I think that we can absolutely do more, especially with our rapidly aging population. We're going to come into a huge crisis within the next probably 30, 40 years, where we have way more folks of geriatric age than we can properly take care of with our system.
Job opportunities,
folks.
Sure.
But yeah, all that to say, like, as far as healthcare goes, as far as economics goes, as far as a lot of things, I am probably pretty left-leaning. The one thing that I would probably be somewhat more centrist on would be, again, our hot-button topic that I would normally shy away from talking on here is, you know, abortion. But for me, it's honestly, I'm not going to say, like, no, you can't do it. You're an evil, awful person. Honestly, I just want to make sure that you have all of the options available to you.
Are you saying there's nuance here, Jake? Are you saying that you can endorse a policy but not necessarily support its action?
Oh, my goodness.
I know.
That's why this isn't a politics-based podcast. We'd have to pick a side. So the beautiful thing is I don't participate. That's pretty much where I'm at in the political world. I live under a rock. I am apathetic to politics unless it directly influences me. Small business information things here in the state of Washington.
Throw a Ralph Nader quote at you
in
a minute.
Very specific to me. I believe in funding my local levies for libraries because I don't want the next generation to be idiots because they need to take care of me when I get old. That's really as far as my political leanings go.
And that's fair.
I mean,
puts you firmly left center, man.
That does it? All right.
You better be careful.
I don't even know which side is left and right anymore. Like, I honestly don't care.
You know, I'm going to get you a Bernie Sanders sticker for your car.
When I say taxes, what's your response?
Necessity?
Sounds pretty progressive to me.
Yeah. We're going to get you a Bernie Sanders
these days.
Yeah. Go Bernie.
Oh, I want to get you one of those like weird visor hats with the wig on top that like has all the crazy white hair.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I would like to say that I'm not a blue dog Democrat. I would vote for whichever candidate seems to align with my thoughts the most.
Well, that's just it. Like,
however,
when I vote for platforms that I, one, am knowledgeable in, and that I have a preference in.
Right.
And I've found that it kind of goes all over the place, and so I don't really consider myself one way or the other.
Well, see, that's why you have a problem with the two-party system. Like, we had a party system like the United Kingdom does, where they have, like, six or seven parties.
I think it
makes
more
sense. Nuance there, but it takes forever to do anything in those types of party situations.
I mean, it takes for everything to do anything here.
Well, that's because the big problem there is because we have two parties that don't get along anymore.
True.
And at least
a recent
publicly.
Relatively.
Yeah, within the last...
I mean, they've always disagreed on things, but...
Since the mid-90s,
It's gotten a lot worse.
A little earlier is when it started, but sure.
Newt Gingrich.
What year was that?
That was... I don't know exactly, but it was either late 80s or early 90s.
I feel like it's all
when
before
it
our
really
times.
Reagan is when it really started to break. Gingrich broke it more. McConnell broke it even more. And...
McConnell?
Mitch McConnell. Turtle Boy.
I'm familiar with that one.
Oh, he's you would know his face.
He was minority leader of the Senate for like years. He controls what he controlled what would go through a vote on the Senate.
Just remember,
he is the Senate. Well,
he is
not
the
lives under a rock, doesn't pay attention to names.
Fair.
I'm lucky to know your name on a daily basis. Okay, just don't.
It's nice to know that we know or mean so much to you, Russ.
Yeah, really. No,
it's okay, Billy.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. Y'all know.
Y'all know. Yeah, it's fine. I abstain just because it's not prominent in my life.
That's fair.
Until it is, right?
Right.
And that's going to be the fun part, is the one day that I have to make a horrible choice. So as an example, and I'm sure someone's not going to like this because it's the politics.
Just say it.
There's two parties, right? I voted for Biden because I didn't want to vote for Trump.
That was
fair. Biden's platform.
That was it, though.
That was Biden's platform.
I voted for Trump because I didn't know who else was running.
Wow. That's...
Excuse me while I take another drink of scotch.
There's your educated...
Jake, pour some more.
There's your educated voter right there.
That hurt my brain.
I know, right? But that's just it. Now, think about all the people who actually do vote. And this is the part that actually annoys me. I feel more people should abstain from voting. I know that's an unpopular opinion. But
no.
I believe that you need to be informed. I think you should have to take a mini test before you can actually vote. Because you need to actually understand the platforms. You need to understand their platforms. You need to understand the ideas that they're bringing forth. I just feel like there's so many uneducated.
I
want
to stop you right there because you're running very close to restrictive voting practices. Because
true.
Because, and I'm going to throw out some reduction here. Say the person can't read, or say they can't read English, they have diminished mental capacity,
which is a surprisingly larger portion of the population in the United States than people think.
And you're getting dangerous. And you were we're getting dangerously close to literacy tests for voting, which were a thing back in the 1900s, right after the Civil War, and it kept a lot of black people from voting.
And I absolutely say that should not be happening. I mean, that's obviously fair, and equality is a thing.
Right.
But we need to find a way to make sure everyone is educated.
Yeah. See, I'm
civics classes
almost,
in high school.
Yeah, and make them actually legitimate.
Make they're them mandatory, make like them a, legitimate.
Yeah, they're mostly just like pass it because it's
senior year.
They're too
I've
much like history courses.
Heard of that.
What?
Yeah. See,
civics classes.
Current world problems is what we call them over here.
Nope, never had those. Yeah.
Really?
No.
That's frightening.
Well, that's just it, right? Like, I would assume that this is a standard curriculum item. Maybe.
It's supposed to be.
Somewhat, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
From what I remember.
In Idaho, it might just be a Washington State thing.
Well, yeah. I can only say what we experienced. Yeah.
Well, that's
just
it. And I may be misremembering. Maybe it was such a horrific experience for me. I blocked it out of my mind.
Understandably.
But I don't believe we had a civics oriented. We had U.S. history, but it was U.S. history, not current topics. We had world history. That was more global. I don't remember anything specific on any current issues that were going on.
No, I was spoiled because my dad was both a history major and a lawyer, and he threw Schoolhouse Rock at me from a young age.
Yeah.
I love Schoolhouse Rock.
I don't know. Closing thoughts on this because we ran over long.
Vote. If you don't turn on to politics, the politics will turn on you. That's Ralph Nader for you.
That's deep.
Yeah.
No Bernie.
I am almost on the compulsory voting bandwagon.
I think election day should be a national holiday.
Oh, I agree.
Oh, absolutely.
On the level with
absolutely.
July 4th.
See, I'm kind of weird, right? Because I say I want people to be educated before they vote. I also want people to vote. Like, I actually want...
This goes back to the discussion we were having about abortion.
Yeah.
Just because the fact that it should exist for all people does not mean that everyone should just do it.
Right.
The option should be there the compulsion to or for should not.
Sure.
Well, this is a great topic leading out of the politics
and thus section. We end our podcast.
And thus we end our podcast episode.
We should have just like rigged the wheel to end on religion or something.
Oh, no, I think this is fantastic.
This is also good. Misinformation as a topic.
Our entire podcast.
Don't believe anything you've heard. We are not lawyers.
We are not financial advisors. What else are we not?
Doctors,
evangelists. This is strictly our opinions. We have no basis for any of the things
are
that we say
even
here.
Are we human at this point?
I'm.
Oh man, that's
popsicle.
A heavy question. Ooh. Scotch.
Yep. Anybody who's read Dune, interesting question.
Tried to watch Dune. Didn't happen.
Which one?
The Dune.
Well, there's the movie, and then there's the sci-fi series.
The movie.
Well, I was going to say, the miniseries. 1984,
directed by David Lynch, which
he... Is that like the four-hour freaking...
Yeah, it's only like 2.5.
Okay.
Anyway.
It's long, and it's basically a weird acid trip.
Spicy flow.
Yeah. Let's just have Virginia Madsen just stare into the camera and occasionally fade into a starry night, and then back into Virginia Madsen talking into the camera, and then fade into a star... Worst opening.
That was a very interesting choice, to be sure.
Of all the things Lynch could have done, the man directed Mulholland Drive, for God's sake.
How does this tie into misinformation again?
Actually, it doesn't, because everything we've said is factual.
Yeah.
The problem with misinformation is that you get blatant misinformation, like, oh, there's a pizza place in D.C. running child sex trafficking out of the basement. It's a thing. Look it up. Pizzagate. I'm not joking. Pizzagate.
Just because you add gate to something does not make it a government conspiracy.
Right?
It's terrible.
Yeah, I hate it.
Misinformation in this day and age, especially with the ability to share information as quickly and as virulently as we do.
Virulently?
Is that a word?
Virulently.
Virulently. Anyways, as quickly and
I'm the English major.
And I think you're wrong.
I think you're wrong.
I've proven you wrong before on this topic.
Children.
That's how Jake gets his kicks, apparently.
The ability for random people to post things on Facebook and whatnot, it's been very interesting with the censoring, or at least the flagging of content to detail things that may or may not be true.
Yeah.
I find it just fascinating. And, of course, a lot of people are crying about the whole, like...
culture?
Well, cancel culture and you know, free speech.
Anybody who brings up First Amendment with any of this stuff, like, don't get me wrong, censorship by corporate entities scares me.
It does. But,
for different reasons
but
that a lot of people
bring
up.
It's not covered...
It's not covered by the First Amendment.
It is not covered by the First Amendment
at all.
The First Amendment allows us to speak freely against the government, and corporations are not the government.
Nope. And the fact that you can, yeah,
Bezos
waiting for
has
that.
Ideas.
But yeah, the fact that you can spew this rhetoric on like how Trump is the rightful president,
and how he's going to be reinstated in August.
Let me get another drink.
It's fascinating.
It's proof that the First Amendment is working.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's the beautiful thing. Now, there have been things that have been taken down, right? Facebook has removed stuff. Twitter banned Trump.
Facebook has re-loosened its...
Oh, yeah, they have.
Yeah, but not... Like, the government has put pressure on Facebook to censor content, but not in any particular way.
Yep.
No,
Trump's administration actually tried pushing Facebook and Twitter and the other big ones to censor things more towards his direction.
Really?
Looking through some of, like, the... was it C-SPAN stuff? Like when Zuckerberg was called into the Senate?
Interesting.
Yeah, it's and just in general, it's a hot mess. Like,
well, free speech is a bully club that either side can use.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Just in clear cutting swaths. You know, there is no nuance when it comes to wielding the First Amendment, and wielding intentionally.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And this is the two-edged sword. That is democratized media. Now, back in the day, when you only had three news channels, you didn't get as much. Let me put it this way: you didn't get 31 flavors of crap like you do now.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Now, granted, you still probably got some crap like the Red Scare and anti-communist, very socially conservative things. They were sustained from a lot of misinformation from. Very centralized media. The other problem to that, and this I think goes against your point of humanity being worth saving, Jake, is that now you have 31 flavors of crap. You know, you can get news however you want it. If you want to follow the QAnon stuff, you can. If you want to say China controls everything, you can. If you want
bamboo in our voting palettes.
You can absolutely create your own sphere of influence at this point. And, the problem is
we have a million spheres of influence and they're all fighting against each other.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of flows into the too much technology thing too.
It does. It does.
You know, how like, I love freedom and I love free speech and I love discourse and talking, but at the same time, we seem to have almost done ourselves a disservice.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know how to fix it. I don't think that removing these platforms is going to fix it.
No, it's going to take concerted effort on behalf of these platforms. For example, when you see an article titled something like, oh, you know, man dies of blood clot from coronavirus vaccine, that's a socially irresponsible headline, because what that ends up doing...
Well, there's no way you can get all the data.
Exactly.
From that headline.
What it does is it drives clicks, and everything focuses on clicks, because clicks equals dollars.
Clickbaits are a thing. That is absolutely how people make money.
And clickbait has gone beyond just those like crappy ads you see at the, you'll never believe what so-and-so. It's become mainstream. It has become latent in mainstream media because, I mean, honestly, you can't really authentically summarize a nuanced article into one line and have it be legitimate. Now, a lot of this, I've seen a lot of this in the car community around electric cars, you know, like, oh, will the grid survive, blah, 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 you know? And of course, people don't read past the headline or the byline, and they just flame war each other out in the comment section without actually reading the article.
My personal favorite is watching people arguing on Facebook using the same article in different contexts, based on the headers.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
It's fascinating.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think part of the fix is going to have to be, and I don't think this is the full fix, is going to have to be kind of like what we talked about with civics, like making real research and forcing students to actually understand how the research process works, how the scientific process works, because clearly Americans don't understand it.
Well, after 2020. But see, the problem is not that they don't understand it, it's that they don't accept it when it's presented to them legitimately. They think they have an understanding of it.
I'd potentially argue against that, but I can see where you're coming from. But it's just like, I didn't get a real honest to goodness research approach and be taught how to do real research until I got into a 4-year university. Oh, yeah.
College usually is where that ends
up.
That
is way too late.
It is.
That is way too late.
See, that's interesting. I got that in 10th grade.
I did kind of. We learned how to Google
really
stuff-ish.
Class,
I lived in a podunk city in the middle of nowhere
that
had no real classes.
Fair.
I mean, that was the downside is we were attracting people who lived in the community to teach, and they were teaching from 1987 textbooks.
Oh, boy.
So
you can teach. I am adhering less and less to blaming textbooks for misinformation, because if you're a teacher worth your salt, you teach beyond your teaching should transcend the textbook.
Yes,
now, absolutely. If you get a crappy textbook, that's a great example because you can use the textbook in and of itself to like, look at how we've changed, you know, or look at how things have changed, how you know, what's evolved, basically, whatever you want to say. Yeah. And so I don't buy like, oh, our textbooks are from the 50s. Great. Use them as a historical element to show the changes that have happened.
Now, I think there's more. I mean, this yet again could be another topic that we delve into next season, is like, you know, a lot of teachers are hamstrung with what they can even teach out, like not even including their textbooks.
We did talk a little bit about that during our education episode.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
But no, I think that's definitely a thing.
Yeah.
So. All right. So in closing.
In closing, this has been a really great experiment, I think, with y'all. I'm very thankful to have had the chance to record with y'all, and I hope that we continue this on in the future.
Oh, my closing was going to be read the article. The headlines suck.
Also that.
But yes.
But yes. In more global closing.
Sorry.
Yay, fun scotch. There you go.
We encourage our listeners to post articles or other things that you find interesting into our comment section. Please also
keep it relevant.
Try to. Also, please submit some ideas for us to talk about. Season 2 is coming up, and we will try to touch on as many interesting things as we can. If there's something that's near and dear to you, please let us know. We'd love to hear from it from you and be able to talk about it.
User-generated content.
Yeah.
See, it's the democratization of media. It's going to kill and save us at the same time.
Yep. Come find us on scotchandsocialism.com, on wherever you listen to your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, eventually, if we can ever figure out how to get to work, Spotify, etc. Find us on social media, Scotch Socialism, on both Instagram and Twitter. Please listen and drink responsibly.